The following interview was conducted with William C. Carson for the Laurel County African American Heritage Center Oral History Project. It took place on July 17, 2005, at Mr. Carson's home in Pittsburgh, Kentucky. The interviewer is Laura Smith.
My name is William Carson, and I was born in Catlettsburg, Kentucky, March 7, 1931.
All right. We're going to start today by, I'm going to ask you a little bit about who your parents were.
Well, my dad was named William Harlan Carson. My mother's name Beatrice Nelson Carson.
And as you said, you were born in Catlettsburg,
Kentucky.
Where exactly is that located?
Right out from Asheville, Kentucky, about 20 miles.
20 miles.
Back west of that. Come on out, 23.
And what kind of work did your parents do when you were
younger?
Well,
my daddy did construction work. He helped build a fix dam down here in Ball County. Worked in a coal mine. And he hauled mail from Plastic County to Somerset on a horse. Back in the journey, man. He was a Pony Express man. Late years, he was working in Harlem in a coal mine. That's where he retired.
How did you guys get to Laurel County?
Well, I really don't know. I guess Dad just traveled around. He worked here and yonder back in his younger days. See, his home was in Plastic County, which I guess he met Mother. So coming through Lincoln County into Mount Vernon, he hauled mail through that. And when they come here, I guess I was 2 or 3 years old, so I really don't know.
And what kind of work? Did your mother work in the home?
Yeah, she's a homemaker. Well, she worked a domestic home. Worked in the later years, but she also was worked at home. There was 10 of us, she had a handful.
Oh, my goodness. So you have 10? 10 in all?
Ten kids.
Wow.
And so daddy worked in Harlem all the time. So that's her mama home. And us boys, when we got big enough, we fooled out on the farm. We about to take care of that. Me and my cousin, now we used to haul coal. At a Litton town over there, we took 4 mules, put a ton of coal for house coal for people. That's 9, 10 years old.
Wow.
But we were working. Tie a garden, you know, in the summertime, people. Month, we kept a field full of old mules, horses. And we worked well all our lives, really.
How many boys were there?
Five.
Mm-hmm. Boys and five girls?
Six of us, nine.
Tell me again some of the jobs that you listed off, several of the jobs that your father did. But you said he worked on the Dixie Dam.
Yeah, he worked on that. That'd be considered construction.
And that was where again?
Over around Bergen, Kentucky.
Okay.
That's where Dixie Dam's at.
Okay.
I never went over to it. I know about where it's at.
And that would have been built in the 1940s?
That probably built in the 30s.
In the 30s, okay. And then he also did delivered mail.
Yeah, delivered mail, I guess. That probably back in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Delivered mail. I know they delivered none after we come here, but when he was a young man, wasn't married enough, he carried mail from a little place they called Plato. They called it Pumpkin Center now, but they called it Plato then, to Mount Vernon on a horse. And like I said, that's probably back in the 20s, I'd say.
So by the 19, when you said you were two, so it would have been the...
See, I'm the third child, so that it had to be back in 20 if I was born 31, so if I was married, I would get out of there after that.
So when he got to Laurel County, what kind of work was he doing here?
Well, I reckon after he come over here, he started working in Harlem.
In Harlem, okay.
I used to see him and my uncle catch a train down there in a truck down where we live, ride it in Harlem.
So would
I was a big old boy, 7, 8 years old.
So would he go, would he commute to Harlem or did he stay down there?
He'd stay down there all week and work and then come back.
On the weekend?
And then hobo back into Harlem. Up to the bottom of the car. My dad didn't borrow from a car. My uncle never did own a car. My dad bought a car. So he went back and forth in the car after that. So he worked down in Harlem for about 35 years in coal mine. And so he quit, and I made him 43. stayed out about 5 years, and he went back. Mm-hmm. And he stayed out till he retired. And he come home as a retired fiddler.
Do you know which mine he was working at?
Their clothes plant.
Clothes plant. Mm-hmm.
Their clothes plant. I don't know it. I had a different name back in town. It was a camp.
Mm-hmm. And that was an African American camp that was there.
Yeah. Mine. Yeah, actually, it was where he lived upon a little place they called Shack Hill. Him and his brother batched up there together. Mm-hmm. And they'd come home on the weekend and go back in on Sunday evening. Stay all week and come back.
So is that the coal camp, the Shack Hill? Is that mm-hmm. part of the
That's
housing
part of
they
the coal,
provided?
Yeah. Went down to the police, well, I bet them companies own all them houses, mm-hmm. got people in that work, I imagine. But there were several on houses, well, all up down through there, and they had a company store where they could go buy anything they wanted. I know I went in there when I turned 18 and I offered to get a job, and they told me to go to the last place. I went to school and get my school record and come back. Who needs a school record for the 7th hole? And I walked out there and didn't go back.
Now, where did you and your mother live?
Down here in East Bernstead.
In East Bernstead? Mm-hmm. Whereabouts in East Bernstead?
Well, you know where APR is at the
yeah.
time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We turn left to APR and go out there a quarter of a mile. It's a big brick church. We turn back to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Grind across the railroad track and turn left again. She lived in the second house upon the right.
Hmm.
Well, they call it Altamont in there with the address.
Altamont, mm-hmm. Is any of the structures still standing or does anybody
know?
The
old house she raised in has been torn down.
It's been torn down.
That's the house I've got two sisters and brothers that live there.
They
I'm going to build a new house about 15, 20 years ago and tore down the old house. We raised this.
Why did you choose East Bernstead? Was that?
Well,
was there any reason? Did you know friends?
My daddy had an older brother, and his wife had a farm, well, about a half mile where we live.
Oh, okay.
And I guess he married her, and so well, I think Daddy and Mama really stayed with them a while when they first got married.
Mm-hmm. So family sort of brought you to that
Daddy
area.
And Daddy bought a place back up the road there, well, where we're at now, which is about a half a mile where his brother lived. And so it's been there ever since. And they worked in the mine and went back and forth together. Okay. Them boys, so they stayed together for much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sister, but she was in Detroit. And so they just hung together all their life.
Yeah. How many acres did you guys have, or how
long? Well, Dad just had seven.
Seven?
Mm-hmm.
And you did farm on that land as well?
Oh, yeah, farm, raised hogs, milk, had cattle milk, and everything else. Made your own chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy would come home during Thanksgiving. We'd kill four hogs, and we'd put them in the smokehouse. That was our meat for the winter.
Mm-hmm. So you guys, what all was on your farm? You mentioned a smokehouse. What else?
Oh, yeah, a smokehouse and a barn. Mm-hmm. Chicken lot at that time, a hog lot at that time. Mm-hmm. Had all fenced in, and we raised a bunch of hogs. So Daddy would sell the pigs, and he'd keep four or five hogs we'd kill every year. And if on chicken, we didn't go to Kroger's like we do now, but that's where we are.
Yeah.
We'd run his head off, scald him, picked him, cut him up. But people don't live like that no more, but that's the way we done it.
What kind of crops did you raise?
Oh, we raised corn, beans, tomatoes, taters. That's everything you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle, where he said he used to raise wheat, so we'd have our own flour.
Oh, wow.
We'd go around when it's ashy and get that. We never take no corn to the mill, but we raised corn.
You did raise corn.
But so a lot of people don't touch the corn, had it grind at that time. So we didn't have that much room for all that.
Did you mainly just, you know, use what you were raising? You mentioned that you did sell some hogs.
Mm-hmm.
Would you sell anything else, or did you mainly?
No, we about use everything.
Used everything else.
We made hogs and have pigs. People buy pigs or something like that, but didn't sell nothing there. Milk and stuff, had to actually give it to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. We didn't sell nothing off of it.
So what kind of chores would you have had? You said that you know, you started out working pretty young. You were going to work at 9, but...
I plowed the whole new grass when I wasn't big enough to stand between the plows. That's a mule pulling, right? And that's how we hauled coal in the wintertime. Me and my first cousin, for peeping around, everybody brought coal in.
Mm-hmm.
And out that road, it took 4 mules pulled on a coal out of it. So we'd be out there in mud knee-deep.
So where would that coal have been coming from, Altamont?
No, yeah, going back from where it's called Litton Town Road.
Mm-hmm.
They had little mines, guys had little mines back there.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go back there and buy it and take it over who wanted a load. Well, it cost stuff a ton of coal, what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to deliver it and take it to them for $4 or $5 a ton. And we hauled groceries when we was about 9, 10 years old from East Furnace did the head of that ridge for Kid Brother Grocery. But then people just come to town maybe once a week, once a month, and they have to walk out. There wasn't no other transportation. I just rode a mule up there. But, and they'd come around and buy a grocery there at Kid Brother's store, and me and him would deliver the people on their groceries back ahead of that ridge on Saturday evening. Everybody get a ride back, we have to walk to that.
So Kid Brother's store used to be the grocery. Where was that located exactly?
Well, when you know where that Shell station is right there?
Right now.
You turn right, there's a building up and to the right. About 50 foot up there, they had a Kid Brother had a big grocery store. See, they had one in London one at about the same time.
It was also a kid's grocery, okay.
The Kid's Brother's store right there on the right. And Tom Craft, he used to have one right on past there, not turn off the right, just right on past there. It used to be a store.
Mm-hmm.
And right down the corner used to be a hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
There's Russell Bones lashing and all Castile's lashing running. Well, it's gone now. What's that where food landed about where Tom Craft had a store?
Oh, okay.
And right down below them, the Watkins, Fanny Watkins had a store with 3 stores right there in East Burnside.
Mm-hmm.
Which ain't one now, but it used to be 30.
Hmm. How much would you get paid hauling coal to people's houses or delivering groceries?
Well, we get about $1 extra more than we paid for it. If we give 3, we charge them 4.
Mm-hmm.
So we got about $1 for hauling it that way.
Hmm.
And like I say, everybody burnt coal, you go over by them guys. See, back in the end, they didn't have the relief that people got now. Them old guys, they'd go over if they could run them 2 or 3 ton of coal out of old gal's whole mine, it fed the family.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go over and buy it. Well, they have several of mine around there, just a wagon load. If we give $3 for it, we'd set it $4, $4.50, give about $1, $1.50 for hauling it and take it to them. And that's where they stayed warm.
Mm-hmm. And so that was all sort of family owned mines that was back in there,
yeah,
just one family.
Just had their own little place back there, starting a little mine. Well, to make a living out of there, so to buy.
Yeah. Do you remember about how many there would have been? How many mines back in there?
It was 2 or 3 back in there. We used to buy coal from a guy they called West Lee and West Miley Coal. Another guy used to be another guy, but I can't think of his name. You know. In the later years, they got the stripping the coal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there. But back in the end, if you had coal on your place, you could just fix your little entrance and start back down the hill. If it's that, if it wasn't too deep, just scrape it off and just like that right there and just load it up.
Mm-hmm.
But then if it had a little mountain over it, they could get them entrance and not go back down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's what them guys back, what we call them, little gouge hole mines.
What are they called?
Little gouge hole.
Gouge holes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's really what they done. They just, you know, go back, the maintenance go back in there and just start digging it off and selling it. And see, some of them all had mules and pulled it out with it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too fair, 2 or 3 workers, they can push it out. See, so played all little cars and they rolled up there on the outside and they'd dump it out and they'd sell it and buy one.
Now, would they just sort of sell it locally or did it ever get transported?
Well, most sold locally, they didn't run that much.
Yeah, so it's just sort of to for the families around there to keep warm.
I see. You know, when they're on the apiary over to the right, they had some little bit bigger mines over there, and a lot of people trucked it out years ago, but I didn't truck none of that out till the late years on back after World War II. They had a big coal on here, and we hauled a lot of because they for a holler been piled up there maybe 20 years for when old the man for slack. And after World War II, they loaded right down these marshes on railroad down. And them guys going back in there, when the mine had been closed down for years, they'd go that slack out when they throwed back in there, wasn't old the man for it. Everybody wanted block coal for half of it. But then they'd burn anything they could ship. If it looked like he loaded up, he brought over and throwing that railroad gun. So I'm about 13, 14, I'm doing that. That's when my daddy quit the mine, bought an old truck. I was helping him. And he hauled it out of there then. And probably I'd have stayed on the truck. He went back to the mine that time. I was 18, so I'd have stayed on the truck.
Now, why did he leave the mine?
Oh, he had a cousin get killed. They were close. When he got killed, he quit. Well, I said, he come out and bought an old truck. It wore out. Big family. And he said, about 5 or 6 years. And finally went back to the mine. He wasn't waiting if he could make enough money to keep his family food. So he went back to the mine. And make a trip. Well, I was with him. He'd make a trip. The truck broke down. It wore out. And he did that for about 5 or 6 years. And his heart went back.
What do you remember about the life of a miner at that time from your father? Did he share stories with you about what it was like?
No, most things he said, don't never get a job in the mine.
So never do it, right?
Yeah, he didn't like what he did. Like I said, that's all it was to do, really, back when, back in the 30s, during the Depression, when that's going on. If you had any kind of job, you just lucky. But see, they worked in Harlan County where back in the 30s, they organized and got the union.
Now, did your father join the union?
Oh, yeah.
Is he involved with that?
Yeah, he was in that.
Do you remember any of the stories?
Most time, he said, when they come out on the track, most time he'd come home. That way he wouldn't be bothered with it.
Yeah,
I know back in the 50s, they stayed out up there for about 11 months. When I was hauling coal in Clay County. He said, you better watch it over there. I'll be coming down there shooting around and trying to organize a wire. See, the more non-union, they'd working every day. The people up there had been quit for a year. But they're trying to get what they want. Well, I've been over at Clay County hauling coal, had a machine gun man there, one of them tipple.
Wow.
You could see them, but there was no trouble.
Yeah.
Which they had a little bit on up there, closer to Harlan, up there, Whitesburg, back when they were trying to organize them. I know Daddy come out. We were come here and work. And go up there, I guess the days he's supposed to be on picket line or something. Or other. I see back there when they first started that, he, one of them helped organize. They didn't start a union back in the 1930s somewhere. And I hear him talk about that. You know, they're involved in too much commotion in over there. But them guys live there. They live right there with him. But he had advantage of that. He could come home.
He could come home and get away from it, right?
I reckon it was, well, I know one time, but they called, he used to call that Bloody Harlan on that account.
There was a lot of violence.
They had a time when they first started organizing. But that's the best thing they ever had for a working man. It gives them a chance. I know when my dad, he died in 1973. My mother died this year. And by his pension and everything and all his insurance took care of mom went off the day she died. And I think that was an awful good thing. I hadn't, but she just had to give up everything she had to get by as long as she did. But he brought her pension, she was covered up in insurance. Up the day she died, she didn't have to worry about no medicine, no doctor bills, nothing else. So I think really a good deal. Really hit me better deal when I was hired a union member. But our insurance was nothing like theirs. And I think it should be, but it's not. And maybe in the years to come, they'll work on that union. That'll be the best insurance the union has. United Mine Workers. It's awful good, I thought.
So your father didn't have any problems, you know, organizing and joining the union, even though he was African American. And at that time in the 1930s, it didn't matter. They were unionizing.
No, they unionized everybody when the government would be in there. You was in it. Of course, really, back in them times, it was mostly blacks that worked in them mines. But I know in the 50s, about many one it was another. If I've been up there and seen them. This white guy's here, lived here. He used to ride back and forth with Daddy after he once got a car. I don't know where they're at now, but I've been with Daddy when he picked them up. They hopped riding back and forth. But they all was close. They got along good.
So during that time, in the 1930s, and as your father was working in Harlan and in the mines, how would you describe race relations at that time here?
Well, see, back in the 30s, I was a little bit young to realize what was going on, but which I always got when I was even up in the 40s for a while, without really not doing anything with white and racial. Then it was rough in, but like I said, I've worked with white people all my life, and I've always got along with them. And, with almost all my friends white folks. That's all I work with. You know, back there when I started working for Griff, and I drove my own truck, I stayed for myself, I yelled at them. The place was out, wasn't welcome, I didn't go.
And
if I didn't think I'd get a hamburger up here, I didn't go shot with them. If I was going down, well, I went to get down. It was no population after working in the town. Between here and there, it wasn't. But I was all down the road, I always got along with everybody. But I know they didn't serve black people, I just didn't go.
Just didn't stop.
Yeah, I didn't have no trouble. And I'd be going down, if I wanted breakfast, I'd get to that down, and the rest of them down and eat. For sales, I let them know where I was going.
How would you know, though, about which restaurant served and didn't?
Well,
I mean, was it just...
Well, go one time, you know.
Yeah, okay. So it was just trial and error, or did somebody, did somebody tell you, or
you
just sort of figured it out?
No, you go in, it's, well, we don't serve.
Yeah.
It's not fine. Yeah. It's going out. And if I was with a white woman, him left, and I was in my truck, we would stay together. And a lot of times I'd go in the back. I don't know who you wouldn't serve in front.
Right.
And I started working the grill, but that was back in the 60s. And I was on a black apple guy in the work for them.
For the Greers?
I worked for them for 10 years. But so all them boys, me, was all real close. And then where I wanted to go, we'd go. Well, I was going back and eat, and they'd go in the front, and I'd have to watch them come out. If I didn't want to go in, they'd bring me something out to the truck. And I said, well, if I wasn't welcome, I'd carry them back on.
Well, let's go back a little bit, back to your, when you were young again. And can you tell me around, you know, that age, I know you started working, you said when you were about 9, outside of the home, I know you've probably been working, you know, on the farm since.
Yeah, we worked on the farm. We hauled coal from people.
And what, did you ever get to go into London at all on chores, or
No, we never did come up here to London do nothing. It's just more so at that age, this local 9, 10 year old, we just hit around, we'd plow gardens for people in the summertime, and we haul coal for people in the wintertime, just such stuff as that. But we needed to come up here and do no London do no work. But we just more so stayed down there, like say, Mama had an 85-acre farm. We us boys about worked on head. He kept 8 or 10 horses all the time. So the time we put up hay and see we'd done everything. But mule had to plow the fields and everything with them. And so we did that about all the time until we got up there an old 17-18 year old, most of us, and started riding a truck. When we come up, you either had to make your job or leave. This part of the country. So the family of us just sucked through with the truck. My daddy buying that. And when the rest of us got older, we just started fooling. I went daddy back to the mines. He had an old 46 Chevrolet truck. He went back in about 48. And I just started hauling coal on that. I did that up to about 63, and coal stopped going out, and I stopped working for Chris.
But before that, when you were younger, did you get to go to school at all during that time?
Oh, yeah, I went to school up in Atlanta for first year.
Which, the school that was in London?
Yeah.
Okay, so the London Colored School, was that what it was called at that time?
Yeah, well,
okay.
They got that glass shop right now.
Right,
old,
Shamrock
old school
glass,
was
right.
burnt down. They tore it down there, we got that glass shop. Mm-hmm. That's my first year of school right there. And I went back to, and it'd be at one of these parts here. Mm-hmm. It's called APR.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there to the eighth grade. And I graduated out of there. I went to Barberville, Rosenwald. One year of high school.
How would you commute to Barberville?
Well, the teacher from London, he lived here in London.
Mm-hmm.
He come to these first day morning to pick me up.
Mm.
And it was four or five of us that hold back and forth hand.
What was school like at those three different places?
Well, it was all right. Like I said, I started going to high school. I started going, everybody that was in that grade with me didn't pass. And I went in one year, and I stayed. Daddy was home, had that old truck, a whole lot of us. And my second year, I just dropped out. Mm. I was about 16 then, dropped out, and started helping around, helping him truck a little while.
How big were your classes when you were going to London?
We had about four different classes. I know we had algebra and reading, or something, what else we had. And we had three different rooms we had to go in.
Was that at Barberville?
At the Barberville.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I had three different teachers, so we probably had about four different classes.
Four different classes.
Yeah. Like I said, it's been so long, I can't hardly remember. Well, I remember, I was thinking of two teachers' name of the day. If I know one of them dead, the other two might be.
Mm.
In fact, I'm satisfied they are. I ain't up 9 years old.
Mm. Do you remember their names?
Yeah, one of them named Stephen Griffin. I know he's passed. And one named Grace Edders. And one named Mrs. West. I think by Mother's Day. But like I said, they was up there. Well, might have been all that old, probably 30 when I was there. So now they'd be 90 if they didn't live it. But I know Stephen Griffin. He was raised right here.
Oh, in London.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the one that you would ride with?
Yeah, the one I'd ride with. And he had a sister-in-law, too, that rode with us. And two more boys. So he'd come east first there, Mom would pick me up. And we'd go to Barville, and then he'd take me back up east first to the post office, and I'd get off and walk down the track home.
Hmm.
I'd be up right next morning and do the same thing all over again.
Where was it located in Barberville, do you remember?
I was on Old 25. I was about, well, Barberville's closed up since I got up. It's about there where that new road crosses over 25. Mm-hmm. It's sitting out there. On the right-hand side of the road.
Is it still there? Is there still a building there?
I don't know for sure. I look all that way every time I go up through there. I can see buildings, but I don't know if it's the same one or not. It's pretty away from where they got the new road there.
That's where the new road crosses over 25?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See, that used to be the main drag all the
right.
way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's just that new road, and it crosses over there. Whether you call it Old 25 or what they call it, anyway, it was 25 at the time. And it was sitting out there, I guess, about a quarter mile out there on the right-hand side of the road up on the bank.
And it was just called the Barberville
Rosenwald High School.
Rosenwald High School. Mm-hmm. Where all did students for that high school come from?
Well, I know they come out of Barberville. I know they come out of Pineville. I know they come out of Flat Lick and here. Third and more in the place up there. I don't know if I did or not. But I was a big bunch out of Flat Lick. That's the place between...
It's down towards
Barberville.
Or towards Pineville, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I know they come out of here and there, and of course, any of them come other places further off, I don't know.
Did any of them board there, or did they make the
commute
every day?
No, they back and forth, further I know, yeah.
Yeah, so they would have to drive.
Yeah, for Barberville, they had a bus out at one of them, Flat Lake, but just a handful of us here, so there's enough for us to get in the car.
Yeah. How many students total was the...
I don't know how many was in there. I need to hear them say.
Yeah.
It's pretty good size school, but I didn't play no sports or nothing because I had to come back.
Mm-hmm. But they did have sports teams.
Yeah, they had basketball and all that stuff, yeah. Ride them plane down all kind of. I'd ride with him. He got ready. I'd be ready to come on. If he'd been a coach, I'd be all right. And I'd roll back and forth with him. He stayed up there. Probably took the clothes to school. I don't know how long he stayed up. I know he'd been to Henderson, Kentucky for years. And he taught over there for years. But I don't know how long they kept that open there for there. When I left, I left.
Do you remember going to the London school at all?
I remember going up there, but I can't remember. We bound to call the bus, I guess. Mm-hmm. I really don't remember the bus. There were several of us, everybody's furniture, but went there the first year or two. But I can't replace us catching the bus, but I had to.
Do you remember who your teachers were?
Yeah, Emily Smith was mine. But I might have heard twice. She was real nice up here, but when she come to Ape Yard, she was real mean. The first year I went to school, I went under her. And I didn't let the police bars did. We had a guy to call Claude Yokley, Emily Smith, and Legan Butler. That was three we had in East Barnstead.
How many kids went to
that? I really don't know how many were at school.
Yeah.
And the one room school went pretty well full, but I don't know how many were there.
But both the one in London and in East Burnstead were both one room, weren't they?
No, I see London had two different rooms. Okay. I know they did on the last, but they had two different teachers. But that first year I went, I probably stayed in that one room. But they had two different teachers at one time, I thought, so they had two rooms in London. But East Burnstead had one.
What was your school day like? How long did you go?
I went about 8 hours.
8 hours?
Yeah, we got there around 8 o'clock. It was close around 30, but I like this now. Only if we had to walk in East Burnstead, I can remember that.
You did have
there wasn't
to
no
walk.
Buses.
Yeah. How long of a walk was it for you?
I'd say a mile and a half. So we turned off, like I say, Mama lived back there. And Ape Yard turned off, go back in there, and that school was up to the right there. Quarter of a mile, I bet. So I'd say a mile and a half. Which wasn't too bad in summertime, but when the mud just knee deep, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
It's zero left by weather. Yeah, well, we made it. My wife used to ride a mule up there.
Is that where you met Joyce, or did you know your wife?
No, before? I probably seen her there first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but she's from here, Pittsburgh. And she come to East Burnstead, I guess she's about 2 or 3 years old. That time I probably already going to school. Yeah, probably already going.
Do you remember anything about, a typical school day, what kind of materials you had or what you normally have for lunch?
No, most of the time we carried so well on the last day of the lunchroom, but I can't remember where the things were fit. That's ordinary food, I guess. We used to carry it from home one time. And they put a lunchroom up for another years, but that's like I say, ordinary food. Beans and taters.
And so then you left high school at 16 to go to work with your father with the trucking business. And it was his own business. Right, that's correct, right? How many trucks did he own?
Oh, he had that. Well, he had two at one time.
Two.
And I drove one, he drove one. Okay.
And what would be a normal run for you?
We just hauled around here. Out of Apeyard Holler, back up at East Burnstead, old slack. Had them strip mines put on railroad gone. And it kind of went down, and he went back to the mines. Next that time, I was 18, I just kept on a little truck. So I hauled coal down with Stanford. Last in the center where I could sell, I was going house to house, selling coal.
So you would go to house selling?
Yeah, not going to many, though. Which now I'd be scared to people too mean anymore. But back up 50 years ago, things was a lot different. People trusted one another a lot more. But you go to somebody's house now, they think you're coming to rob me, I'll shoot you. Especially if you live way back. But then people say, well, everything's just much better. Well, I step all up and down 25, just get sleepy, open both doors on my truck, lay down on the seat and go to sleep and think nothing of it. But now you can buy yourself in a house and you're lucky somebody will come in on you. But then it's just so much easier. I saw all this dope and stuff running in the neighborhood. That's what's running in the neighborhood, dope. Them guys open more dope, they don't care who the hips out of it is. But then I left home, I get sleepy. I just pull on the side of the road, wide spot, open the truck door, and I go to sleep. Same way when I was working, wintertime, I used to leave my truck down there at APR, there where you turn off there. The road was bad. I'd walk home, I'd get out my truck, shut the door, and walk home. Night or day. Same way when I got ready to leave next morning. Oh, that night, that's when I got my truck and left. But now you can't walk in roads like that. And everybody knows one another. Now you know everybody in these first ground now, don't know about. Which that was like, say, 40 years ago, 50. But it just changed so much.
How much were you getting for coal when you were?
Back then, if we took it out of town, we'd get on $7.50 to $8 a ton for it. Like so down here, $3 or $4.
$3 or $4.
Yeah, if we took it down then down with crab orchard or somewhere, said it was $7-$8.
How would you know where to take it? I mean, would you just decide to go somewhere?
Put on a mean load and just take off with it.
Just go wherever you wanted to.
Stop and ask somebody when buy a low coal.
Yeah.
I've sold coal here that way. People come here. Well, not since I've been down here, but here in London. People out of haul coal, so they come, hey, Carson, we can bring me a load of coal. I said, I'll bring a load anytime you want it. They said, well, get me a load next week. I said, okay. I go over to Manchester or get a load of coal, and I take it home.
How much were you paying for it?
Well, then I paid $5 a ton.
$5 a ton.
Then I went to Manchester and hauled over here. I charged $7. I get $2 a ton for hauling. And get a $5 for it and take it down, but I sold it for $10. I'd have to try to double my money on it. I took it to Louisville, once I hauled in Louisville, I hauled it way up in Ohio. In the later years, but like they get $14-$15 a ton, give it for you, haul it, the more you have to get for it. And I'd haul it up in Indiana, sell it, I'd trade it for hay. Then I'd bring the hay back here and sell it. I did that for a long time. Once the coal start going out.
About what years did it start?
It started slowing down in the 60s.
And that's when you started moving out of it.
And I know back when I lived up on the hill up there where my boys lived, I used to heat my house for $35 a year. Now you pay over $100 a month to heat. I had my own truck. I'd go up there at Barbersville and get me a load of stoker. I had a stoker made. Get me 7 ton of coal, which would give $5 a ton for it. It'd run me all winter. But now, this coal is about $60-$70 a ton. I said, they rent the coal, but we got what people were too high. People couldn't buy. They had to go to something else. And everyone get hooked up on this stuff, you're hooked. Well, you can't turn around and go back for coal higher than it is now. One of my last little coal I bought, I took it to my mother's house, loaded out East Smyrna City, he was running coal there. And I had a pickup sitting out there in the garage. I give $102 for a pickup load of coal. I said, I've hauled coal all over state Kentucky to get $102 for it. Yeah, I'm here in the coal field. Before I leave the mine, they'll give $102 for a pickup load of coal. And I'll take it down there to my mother and unload it for she's burning stoker coal. But I said, it's got probably $50-$60 a ton. Well, you know, that's kind of like this gas is now. I bought it 20 cents a gallon. Now it's costing $2.70 a gallon for the cheapest grade. And I bought it, like say, in the 50s, they have a gas wall. If he had one here, I'd buy gas here if I was going down. Well, I guess down if they had one. Now I'd fill up again. If it didn't, I'd wait till I got back home. But a tank of gas would take me over down and bring me back. Well, 5 gallon gas. And it cost you about $1. And I said, oh, dog, I said, I seen this gas. I said, I can get to high. It's kind of from the same place now that it comes in. It's just 10 times as high. And they used to have them gas wars, which your dad probably could tell you about them, where they have them. And this gas outrageous, which, like I say, back when I was hauling coal, back in the 50s, you may go up here now when I see 3 cars on. That's the difference in it. But you see a whole bunch of trucks going that way. It's everybody around APR, East Barnstead, all down through, they haul coal. And so you got that to be a steady flow of coal trucks.
So would most young men at your age, would that have been what they were doing, do you think? Did a lot of young men haul coal? Or?
Yeah, a lot of them did, and a lot of older ones did too. For, like I say, back then, you had to leave as part of the country to get a decent job. And if you bought an old truck, well, you made your job. I've got to go out and put a little coal on it, take off and try to sell it. You're more so a traveling salesman, like we went to house to house. I come knock on your door. You be there buying a little coal today. If you want to buy coal, you might say, yeah. If not, no. So, well, you tell me name and everything. Well, Carson, you come back and stop by another month, I might be ready. Well, maybe go back by there. Maybe that day you might be ready. You might have some money coming in, but they won't spend it right then.
Did you ever want to leave the area?
No, I ain't never thought about leaving here.
You didn't want to go up north? No, I've always.
See, I only had 2 jobs in my life. So I ain't been one of them kind of jumping here and yonder. And I always, well, I made enough to get by. So I never did want to leave, really. It's so always been home, yeah. Which I worked in Nashville 16 years.
When did you go to Nashville?
March 3rd, 1983.
What'd you do there?
I drove a truck.
I drove a truck there? But that was like a freight truck, not a coal truck.
No, it was a fleet truck, yeah. I put that coal truck back in the 60s. I had to, the coal was going out.
And so after the 60s, when you left that job, is that when you went to work with the Greer?
I started working with Greer in 1963.
And what were you doing?
Driving trucks with them.
For construction purposes?
Yeah, they see us interstate and stuff was going through, the construction was going. Which we later, before we worked here, it went in after 63, but we worked other places on interstate roads, 65, 71, whatnot. For this road here, didn't come through here at about 65, 66.
By 75, so you were hauling all of the construction materials.
Yeah, hauling for
that
job. Them, And when they put 85 through here, we got to work at home. But other than that, most of them were. Was off from here.
Right.
Well, we'd stay gone all week, come in on weekend. But that's the only thing was going, really, the construction back in the 60s. I know Greer's, well, they started their being, I guess, back in 1945 or something like that.
Is that when they started?
That's when they started, yeah.
Who was the first, who was it in the Greer family who started? Do you remember?
Well, I guess Willie and Elmo, really. They were the two oldest. Yeah, they probably the started. And see, my name was Warren. My name was Eugene. Which Eugene was over the truck. He's the truck boss when I started. But the rest of them, I know them. I was around them some, but I was around him mostly because he was over the trucks. And he had a brother named Don Young. I think that's where they really got the toehold through him. Where he, state police had a connection down at Frankfort, and they got the hauling all this rock for the state and everything. I know in 1948 I worked for them. And I had a better truck than they did. That's in 1963. I didn't park my truck, start working for them. But they had a bunch of small trucks, a bunch of Chevrolets and in 48, probably about 45, 46, but I had a 48 GMC. And they had a big farm over here on back over at McQuarter. We were hauling coal out of Galilee. And I hauled coal from up there. And we used to be tip of there, where that
That's the furniture place there now, Jerry's Furniture, I believe. Okay. That used to be a coal tip for sitting right now, yeah. And a whole coal up there at a Foggertown over there.
Foggertown, Towards
East. That's where them girls are.
Manchester.
They come over to Manchester, okay. Foggertown.
So was it sort of good for you and some of the other young men that right as the coal was declining out, that that there was this big I-75 being built in the area? Did that help things?
Yeah, it kind of gave a lot of work for
So were a lot of people employed?
Yeah, she did. Worked a lot of people. Mm-hmm. She had say, well, at one time, I guess they about the biggest contractor in the state of Kentucky. Hmm. Maybe in the nation at one time, they were big, mm-hmm. counting up the whole thing.
Right.
Counting trucks and all the equipment stuff. Mm-hmm. And they worked a lot of people. I know, and at that trucking place, they worked a lot of different people.
Do you know how many people they were that were just
driving trucks? No, there at one time, they had 60 or 70 trucks. I don't know how many guys there.
How did the pay compare to what you had been?
Well, at that time, it paid about as good as anything else around here. From when I first started, it was paying $1.50. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have raised that much from that. I quit paying $3.50, but I worked for from 63 to 73. But like I say, it was about, well, they had no meaning away from when I first started, so that's about the best thing was going mm-hmm. when I started down, huh? So my ordinary people paid about $1 an hour mm-hmm. back there in the 60s, so.
And then you went to Nashville after 73?
No, I started working for another outfit in Corbin. Outfit moved into Corbin.
Okay.
And I went up there.
What was that called?
Consolidated Freightway.
Trucking Consolidated Freightways, mm-hmm. okay. So you started doing trucking for them.
Yeah, I quit driving, got out of a Greer truck and got in one there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was down to Mount Vernon. In fact, when they called me to work, well, they come in up here and I went put in an application. And they said, well, we'll call you in there too. I know it's all of night. And I said, okay. I had a job, so I just got back another truck with mm-hmm. Mount Vernon. About 2 days, they called me. Y'all know where I was at. And she called that grid and said, if they come in, said, see if they call me. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. So I live up Little Rock, Mount Vernon. I brought to the office down here, another boy there. And I say, oh, you here to take us on to Manchester and unload it for me? I said, where you going? I said, well, I just quit. Well, you ain't quit, you ain't going. Where you been? I said, watch me. I said, I'll try to get y'all to go with me, but you won't. I said, I'm gone. And so I went on Corbin in and got in that CF truck, went to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there till 99. And I retired.
So you retired in 99?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but you did go to Nashville in the 80s to drive, right?
Yeah, I went so all through the 80s for them. And I started 1914, mm-hmm. 1973, and I quit March the 31st, 1999. Mm. But they kept up with everything. Every footstep you made, I believe they kept up with it. Which Greer didn't keep up with nothing.
Right.
But then they kept up every step you made, you know, where you did it all the time.
So is that better for you?
Oh, yeah. The best thing I ever done in my life, best season I ever had in my life when I went
really?
To the union.
Because it's better pension. And
yeah, it's a good union job and a good mm-hmm. pension and whatnot. And, well, if only I hate to quit. I've been there so long. I could pick my places I wanted to go. I could pick my time I wanted to leave. I said, here I got it, that's where I want it, now I'm getting ready to leave. But good thing I did, 2 years later, they took bankrupt and closed down.
Yeah, you're lucky.
Yeah, I've seen some of them. I thought, those y'all couldn't run this place without me, I wouldn't have quit. But, so I said, I'm glad I'm gone. We didn't wait till they went bankrupt. I said, didn't need to hook me. But I said, I left in a good time.
Yeah.
Which I liked it. And, well, see, when I hopped in, we went, well, here and yonder. Mm-hmm. But they had to bring, they couldn't keep us out over 2 days. Mm-hmm. They had to bring us back home. Mm-hmm. And anywhere they had a change operation, which I could move the next, but I didn't go. They have to move you, you know, everywhere you're based at. They have to put you up for 60 days mm-hmm. on their expense. And if you don't want to go, well, that's up to you. Mm-hmm. They wrote me a letter, and I said, I ain't moving. I said, I've been over all my life. I ain't moving. I said, I'll go, but I ain't moving my family. I'll move up. But see, when you have a change of operation, you got to go where your seniority let you go. So we had guys couldn't go to Lexington, couldn't go over there. They wind up in Pennsylvania and Oregon over there. And I said, I ain't going too far. And if I can go to Nashville, I'll go. So I could help Nashville, so that's where I went. I said, well, 3.5 hours, I'd come back home.
So you did. You just commuted and you were able to still live at home.
I don't have to. Up with the family. Mm-hmm. If you work, you ain't home no time. Mm-hmm. Just in and out. And I said, that's no big deal. I said, well, I have to work. I said, I used to uproot and everything, leave half my kids over here and half of them over yonder. And so I decided to go over and back. So I went back 16 years. I got where I could retire. So I quit and come home. Mm-hmm. Which I liked it. Reflects the way I'm doing. I said, I could pick my places, I could pick my time, mm-hmm. I could go anywhere I wanted to, any time I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I run over there for about 24 years to see what they call the extra bowl. Mm-hmm. I'd run, go this way one day, go over yonder the next day, go back up here the next day, that's where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. They put a bunch of sleeper teams on. The last 2 years of work, and I didn't want to get caught on a sleeper team, and I'd be at a certain place. So if you be it, I went from Nashville to Memphis every night, which is 456 mile round trip. I said, that's enough for old man drive anyway. So I'd go over every night and back. I said, they ain't sticking me in no sleeper, and let some of these guys get out here and kill me in a sleeper. I said, I ain't trusting you, boys. Some of them are wild. If you're on the board, you like to go with anybody. You don't know who you're going with till you get over there. And I said, I ain't going to do that. So I said, I come here on a bid run. So that's the only place they could send me was Memphis and back to Nashville. So I did that every night for almost 3 or 4 years, and I quit. I said, put somebody in the most sleepers. Well, you put you in there somebody moment you can't get along with. But I don't allow them boys, probably being good buddies, and they fell out. We sat there all the way. If you went to California, you was tied up there with him all week. And when you get back, you turn around and go back again. Mm-hmm. I said, nah, I ain't be bothered there. And if I hadn't started to work, I wouldn't have had no choice. Mm-hmm. But I had a choice of not going, so I didn't go. If I had a buddy like me and him being out together, nobody could get along, just me and him beat it. Just went down to our sales every day, been all right with it, but you don't know who you're going with. You go out there and get one of them old nuts, and he'll kill you. You won't stop truck stopping set all day. But I've been with him running sales that way. Boy, going truck stopping, sat there 2 and 3 hours. I'm like, you do sitting here for 2 or 3 hours. You know, we had a bunch up here at Corby, that's where I first started working for. This boy left there at 12 o'clock every night. I left 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd beat every one of them back. Then they have a 6-7 hour start on me. They quickly got in, and in 8 hours, they had to go right back. I said, you guys, only guys I know, I run on your rest going to Cincinnati and back. Well, I had 18 hours between my trip, but I'd go up there and come back. It'd take me about 7.5 hours to go, and it would take them 14, 15 hours. Right. By the time they come home and tuck a nap, they had to go back. I thought, I ain't goofing. I always stop at King. It was King Truck Stop there then. Well, they go down to Richmond, they stop there and stay 2 or 3 hours. Well, they go to the next stop, and they stay 2 or 3 more hours. I ain't fooling with y'all. I'm going up. I'd be back home raising my garden. I ain't sit up here all day. That's just the way some of them operate. They don't fiddle around. Now, they didn't say nothing to us. It'd take them all day to go up Scotus' name back. I said, don't pay no more. We got paid mileage. So why you fool that? I said, paid the same thing to go up there and back in 4 hours it did to go up there and back in 15. Unless you was broke down. If you broke down, they had to pay. But if you're scooping off, That's your time. Then they get home in for delaying freight or something. Or other. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm going to come on back. I'd rather be home. So mm-hmm. I'm looking at the truck stop in the way drinking coffee. And that's what most of them would do. Mm-hmm.
Did you know many people when you were younger who did leave the area who weren't as, who couldn't find jobs, you know, doing trucking or coal?
I can't mention the rest of you. A lot of people left around here called all kind of job. I can't think of all of them now.
Right. What kind of jobs would they, where would they go mainly?
Well, some went to Ohio, mm-hmm. some went to Michigan and whatnot. And, well, some was in, well, that's Ohio too. I have a, well, y'all's got a cousin. She lives in Youngstown now because her husband worked in the front of the steel mill at that time. I had a first cousin, his wife, got a job in Grand Rapids, Michigan, so he went up there and went to work because she had a job teaching. And another cousin, well, he pulled the truck, he went up there, but most all these people, young people around here, went up in there on account of when they worked back in here, back there in the 50s. You think, well, the North, most everybody in the North, it's come out from Tennessee and Kentucky. You go up there around Hampton, Ohio, get talking to people, and half of them from Kentucky to start with. Like, I don't know the names, but...
What kind of industries were up there that people were
calling? Oh, then, see, what some of us had up there. See, the people had that steel mills and all these here cars, General Motors and Fords, and all of them was up there in Michigan, Ohio, and around. Which now they've... brought a whole lot of them on the south. But used to, this used to not be a car factory in the south. But now it is. They had them up there, I guess, around all that water, but they need water and stuff. And well, the union up there got so strong and cost so much, they ready to bring them our factory back this way to with my union. That's bringing it back over to here. But back over in here, people are making $4 or $5 an hour. If a man built a car plant off in Lebanon, that's where they're going. They think about you, they think about the dollar sign. And then my big wheels bring that stuff back here to get away from it. That's what happened. That outfit I worked for, they bought another trucking company, and they throwed everything towards it, and they let the Irish go. Irish are union, and the other's non-union. And some of them said, well, the union was trying to organize some other different trucking. And I told them, I said, you boys, y'all working in front of white car. I said, but hey, I said, that outfit right there is our threat. These other, why? Well, they just go 500 miles. I said, how far do you think we go? We run a 500-mile radius, too. But everywhere we go, we got another terminal that can go 500 more miles that way, too. I said, they're doing the same thing. And we move out of a place, that other outfit they got would move in it. We'd move out of another place, that other outfit would go in. It just brought us, they liked what they was doing. I said, they ever get it big enough to handle it, they'll close this place down. It's too big, they won't have that. I said, well, the same people running both of them. And I said, they can get more work out of them people than they can out of us, and they know it. I said, one of the, they done it different than what I thought they'd do. I figured we'd go on track, and they'd close it down. But instead of that, about 2 years or 3 years ago, they laid off a Labor Day weekend. When I went back, and told me it's closed. And I said, well, they done it different than what I done. I said, no, they do it. See, this outfit over here is Conway. You may see them. That belongs to CF. That belongs to them. What they done, they bankrupt the CF part, and this no here's running wide open. And the same, it belongs to the same people. We got wrong back them traders, if you know it, operated by CNF. But CF, it don't exist. They got it big enough to handle it, just non-union. But they pay them good, but they're working with it.
Yeah.
Well, so we went to home and I worked. They sent me from Nashville, Atlanta. I went to Atlanta and I sat down. Had to give them 1 hour. And when they got me ready, they called me. They had to pay me if I stayed any longer. If them boys go in there, they make them work the dock. You either work the dock or they fired. They can't say angled up. They're fine because mm-hmm. 9 years they ain't got no backing. Mm-hmm. And so if they up still were 5 hours, they work 5 hours. We took 5 hours, we laid down the basement. They had to pay us for nothing. Mm-hmm. And to see, that's just good management on their part. But what they've done is trying to hurt the union. Mm-hmm. So when they told MCL, it told 25,000 union people out of work. They got to start looking for jobs again. Well, some of them probably old enough to retire, but a lot of them was yet needing a job. So they had to look for one somewhere there. They had to start all over with a new man somewhere there after being there for 20 years. And for a long time, them boys I worked with, they were working over at Nashville for roadway and yellow. So that's all union. Went right back into the union. But they had to start at the bottom again. So that really hurt them. And some of them, it's like, well, so many people is now. They come in there and change the operation. They buy you $100,000 house. And they have all at once, they are, as long as they're working. All at once, now we ain't got no job. We could be set out. And they could have left the house in Albuquerque. They could have been paying out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them's in jeopardy. So they about have to try to do something. Well, they latch on anything they can find, I guess, which I talked to some of them. They said it's wrong with roadway and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I'm glad I done gone, so I didn't have to worry about it.
What do you think, as far as currently with the job situation in and around Laurel County, do you think that it's improved for young people?
Yeah, now it's a lot better.
It's a lot better?
No, it's a lot better now. But like I said, when I come up, there just wasn't none here. Mm-hmm. So I think people had to leave mm-hmm. or make them a job. But most of them left. But now several jobs have been here in the last 20, 25 years. But up to then, wasn't no job hard in Laurel County. I'm a few school teachers or something mm-hmm. like that. See, I've got a boy, which he come out of school, which that was 25 years ago. He went right into the school system, mm-hmm. so he's had a good job mm-hmm. all his life. Then he led retired and 50-year-old, mm-hmm. which I was 40-something before I got a job, I could retire.
And that's just, mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, what did we've been talking about work, but what would you guys do for leisure when you weren't working?
I just play around, hide and go see. Mm-hmm. And first of all, that's all it was to do.
Yeah. When you were more like 16 and 17 and 18, were there places for young people to go? Or?
Well, let's see. They had a little restaurant down there. East Burnstead, we'd all get up there and just play around out in the yard and inside.
What was that restaurant?
Spencer Boy had one there, and a man named Ed Joker had a little restaurant there and a little jukebox in it. And we'd go over there and just climb around, go out there and get a ball, play up on one of them hillsides mm-hmm. or something or other. But wasn't much to do. Mm-hmm. They just got out there and just climbed around. That's all it was to do. There was never no big fancy clubs or nothing around mm-hmm. here. So I said they had a little restaurant in Manchester, which I'd been over there because I was a teenager and run around with all that truck, but ordinary people didn't have much way of getting around in. You know, when we come up, I've hauled half the people in East Burnstead to London to the doctor car, one of half a dozen cars in East Burnstead. I've always had an automobile of some kind. Well, I always had a truck. I didn't have an automobile. But I never did own a car until me and Josh got married, and it was her car. Well, I always had a truck, but I always had transportation.
When did you start dating Joyce?
Oh, that's been a long time ago. Back in the early 50s, I guess. She probably about 15, 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably back in the early 50s.
What would you do back then? Would you take her on a date, or did you have to go to her family's house? What was sort of the...
We'd go out to the house and sit around a while.
Sit around at her house?
Yeah. Every year we go to show. That's the only place it was. We go to show.
Go to the movie theater in London.
Yeah. I've had to read it. Sometimes we catch a train, sometimes I drive a truck, just kind of excited to do. But I say, well, nowhere else to go.
There wasn't much to do.
There wasn't much to do. If my mom was in the garden, I'd go out there and help my mom make it look good on me. See, kids won't do that now. They're going to sit down. I said, I'd go make a show. Huh? I said, yeah, okay, you're good. My daughter's got a good old man. I'm helping you work. So
when did you guys get married? How old were you?
I think I was about 26.
26?
You about 20. How much old? 22.
22.
I'm 4 years old in 2 years.
Yeah. Where did you guys, when you guys got married, was that the first time that you moved out of your family's house?
Mm-hmm.
And where did you guys move?
A little house right above my mother. Rented it.
Okay.
Paid for $10 a month. Mm-hmm. There for a while and it burnt down. We had to go find another place. Went back over to her mother's house. Stayed a week or two. Mm-hmm. To find another place to rent down in East Bernstein. When a guy, he sold it. And we've been in London ever since.
So when you went to London, where did you live in London?
See, our first place. Rust is on it. Rust of old Mahon.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And it burnt down. I went out and I rented one for another guy out there about a mile from there. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there. We bought a lot up here off of Parkway, which the Parkway wasn't there then.
Mm-hmm.
And built a house up there where my boys live now.
Mm-hmm.
And in 83, it burnt down. We've been burnt out 3 times, down to nothing.
Wow. What were the fires caused by?
Well, I think that first we had an old house, and we bought a little stove and put it back there. Didn't check the flue, probably. And Josh walked down to my mother's house, and she looked around and said, oh, God, the house so far. And time before it won't take enough to call the fire probably. It made kind of way back off, and it burnt down right then. We lost everything. And I said, rented down there a time or two, stayed down at my mama's cousin's houses for a year or two. I was going to move out of there. And a couple of London, the house behind me caught on fire.
Caught yours on fire.
Yeah, I was tapping Karen water. Dashing on back of mine out of the bathroom, trying to keep mine out to the fire department. We got mine, another neighbor there. He said, Carson, you better come out of there. I said, done called upstairs. He's getting ready to fall in. I had a little portable television. I reached down, picked it up, went out the door. If not, if I hadn't carried water, I could have carried my most apartment stuff out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the truck set right there, right in front of the house, which I could grab something like a dresser and got all the kids mm-hmm. covered, which have been the most apartment stuff that I had. But after about wait too long, best thing I could get was that little television, and I kept it for years.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd been carrying my, I thought I was to just live less than half a mile from fire department. I surely can't pay out this other house before it burned down. It caught them wires, the way you had them all hooked up, and wires running from one place to another, and it caught them wires. And, mm-hmm. run over in the attic. And I kept throwing water on, trying to keep it out till he got there, but it didn't work. The time he got there, and it been gone. And this up here on the hill, that's when I remember what day it was, because we went to, I had that change of operation where I worked. We had to go to Lexington. And y'all, she said, well, I'll just go with you. Okay. And I went down there then after done our bidding out of what we had to do. See, my daughter's going to school in Franklin, so we'll go out there and stay all night and go home tomorrow. Okay. And about 2 o'clock, my boss called, said the house called. And I said, well, you all right? He said, yeah. I said, Gary, I'll be 2 of them, huh? Yeah. And I said, well, don't worry about it. We come home. I said, no, you're all right. We can place the old regular house. So we just come back home. That's when we moved down here.
Now, when you lived at Uncle Russ McKee's, what was that like, that area that he was renting?
Well, he had about 3 houses there. He stayed in one, we stayed in one. had one in the back, an old lady and a daughter stayed in. But that was a rental apartment for him. We just rented it. And Uncle Russ, therefore, we even feed on a little restaurant there in it. And he really had them always. People would come through there working, he'd always rent to them. After I got burned out, he just rented me the house. And this other lady that lived back behind me.
They said three houses. Were there also cabins there?
Yeah, them in the back was kind of like cabins. Back. Yeah, okay. But up there on the front, right next to the street, is where he lived and where I live. He lived over there, and I lived right back here. They just regular house, two-story house. Mm. Had a full basement in it.
And what would the people be coming in? What kind of work would they be doing?
I'd be working in that tobacco and stuff every year.
Tobacco. Mm-hmm. So they were sort of seasonal?
Yeah, seasonal. He'd rent them little cabins back there then.
And that was all he rented to African-Americans who were coming?
Anybody wanted
them. Oh, so white people rented it too? Okay.
Yeah, anybody wanted to rent it. One thing back on Russ, it make him no difference. Yeah. Everybody called him after us.
Yeah. What was his restaurant like?
I just had a little pop, hamburgers, stuff like that, and the other kids going there and dance and whatnot, and that's just about it. Mm. Everybody said he always bootlegged, but I don't know, I didn't buy it, I was too young. They said he bootlegged all of them.
Was he bootlegging out of the restaurant, or?
No, out of the house.
Out of the house.
Then my grown people were over there.
Yeah, the grown people.
And us, well, the teenagers more so, Bill wasn't resting, Danny wasn't drinking or nothing. Mm-hmm. But them are guys that wanted something to drink probably went to the house. But I didn't see him say all that, but somebody said he's always bootlegged. Mm. I know one time when I lived up there where we was at, right beside of it, police went in my house and searched it for his house, which I wasn't there. And so he told them, I don't know what, but they didn't believe him. They didn't know I lived on there. He said, I ain't going through that house so well, I got a house rented. But they thought he was just trying to hide something, and they broke in it. But I went for a raid, came, it wouldn't do no good. I think he said he went through the window. I thought, it's a good thing I wasn't in that house sleep. Y'all come call them out and bust y'all brains out. I think you're breaking in on me. I thought, we know you live down there. I said, well, I've been here for, well, I hadn't been there a while. I said, I've been here for a month or two. Well, he's seen my truck sitting there, but he didn't see me. I know one day I was coming in, and the city police followed me home. And he got over and tell me how to warm. I thought, well, you got to warm for me. I ain't done nothing. Man, I've been gone for 3 days. Don't be coming fooling me. Well, you ain't got no city sticker on the truck. I thought, city sticker? Man, you about to get on way. Told me going down. Man, I've been gone for 3 days. I've been hit you in the head and stuff. I said, I'll be up by next week. Monday, I think that's on about Saturday night or Sunday morning. But they see me turn in there. I never even seen that truck sitting there. And I didn't have no city sticker on it, but I said, well, I ain't done nothing. Well, you know, I said, you see, you got one for me because I ain't got a city sticker. I said, I'll come up here next week and put a city sticker on if that suit. I said, I ain't going no jail. I've been gone for 3 days. I said, I ain't going no jail. He's like, well, that's what bad vibes. I know you're supposed to have one, you know, they voted that out 10, 12 years ago. But you said you had to have a sticker. And I went and got it, then they gave me the wrong one. And then they're going to say something. I said, no, I bought the one, paid you for the one you gave me. Mm-hmm. I said, I ain't buying her another. I think one was $5, one was $10. I think they give me the $5. But that's probably for a car or something other than $10 for a trip. I said, no, I don't buy a second. I ain't buying her another. And it went on. But that's the idea. Which I'd been gone off a little cold and been gone a couple of days, no time to set it and get back. Yeah. Man, I ain't gonna be fooling you going to jail over $5 ticket. You better tell me I'll come by next week and buy a sticker. I know they hadn't done that. So.
Okay. We were talking before about Uncle Russ.
Uh-huh.
Did he also worked for Colonel Sanders at one point? Is that
right? I don't know where they were good friends.
They were good friends, okay.
Which I don't know for a fact, but they claim he's the one that had that recipe that Colonel Sanders got rich off of. Mm-hmm. He gave it to him or let him have it or something.
What was the story about that?
Really about all I know about it. I've heard him say he gave Colonel Sanders that recipe.
I said he would actively tell people that.
Yeah, I've heard that now. Mm-hmm. Like that before my time, how that started. But but he said he wouldn't give him that recipe to start that Colonel Sandler's recipe on that fried chicken. I know when he died, Colonel Sandler did come to his funeral, so they must have been close. Been something to it, yeah.
I heard that Sanders actually paid for his funeral. Did you ever hear that?
I really don't know. He could have. No, I don't know.
But he did come to the
funeral. He was there. I've seen him. Mm-hmm. I know he was there, but what he's done, I don't know. Now, he could have.
Did Uncle Russ served chicken at his restaurant, or is it more just cheeseburgers?
No, he just more so had hamburgers, hot dogs, stuff like that. Which he might have had some different times, but I never get none of when I was there. He may have cooked chicken. Where he started, no cooking it there. I know you run a little restaurant there, and Uncle Russ, he traded around horses and different things. But I never ran him that much.
Mm-hmm. He was sort of a character, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's what probably everybody say. The only time I was really ran him was after we rent that place from him, yeah. And I just in and out there. Mm-hmm. I know he's married to my mother's sister one time. He had one child. Okay. So he really was my uncle.
Oh, okay. So he really was your uncle.
No, he really my uncle. For his son was the chief of police of Yellow Springs, Ohio for a year. Up until he died, well, he retired. And he's dead now. He's been dead now for 50 years. But he come here after Uncle Russ died. Mm-hmm. So he probably sold that property. Probably went to him for his only child he had.
So you think he sold it back to the city then?
Blank McKee's now, boy, owns that now. They own two or three different places right in there. I think they own that, too.
Okay, because I was just thinking about the part that is the park.
No, it's on the side of the park.
It's on the side of the park, okay.
That's right against Mahon.
Okay.
Now, he didn't own it over by the park. Okay. So. Now, imagine if it was anchor show, I don't know. But he may have, at McKee, boy, I may have bought that. First, they used to live next door there for us. I know he didn't own that, but they built a new house there. Nobody's in it. And on up from our own, a woman named Vanny Shield. But she was late to him. I don't know where he bought that or where they get. No, she just got a daughter living, so she probably didn't give it to him. She may have sold it to him. But it belongs to black people right there on Mahon. See, all that on that. Right back this side of the park. The park's over there, it's back over here. And all that, but that one boy, if he may own it, I don't know. I've seen him, but I never did ask him. So his aunt had a place over on 3rd Street. They said he owned it. So, without a doubt, him and his brothers probably owned all that. There ain't nobody living in there now, but the house is just there.
Did you guys ever meet any of the the people who would rent the cabins who were just workers?
No more than see them.
Yeah,
to see them in passing or see strange people. I said, who's that? Last time I see someone for us, something like that, but didn't know them personally.
What was the difference from coming out from East Bernstadt and moving into the city? Was there a big difference?
No.
For you guys now?
And
you knew you got to see a lot of the same people?
It's about food, same people. Yeah. Like I said, I didn't know about much in London. I don't know what everybody's parents did.
Yeah.
But everybody's parents did pretty much the same thing.
Right.
Like I say, when I went to Nashville to come back, I went to Nashville and asked about this and that. And, well, Jerry, no, he died. He'd been dead for 10 years. Well, I've been out here for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And see, when I started trucking, I was so young. The other guy that was all white boys, they were grown men. Mm-hmm. That's who I run with. Mm-hmm. All of the Robinson, Philpotts, and they was all up there when I was only 18 year old. They were 35 and 40. They were my friends. That's who I run around with. Mm-hmm. We'd all hauling coal together. That's who you was around. Mm-hmm. You know, I know, I get talking to them about, and somebody said, Jerry, you don't remember me. I said, no, who are you? Well, I'm such and such a guy, grandson, or he was my uncle. I said, well, you was out of high when I left. Well, I've been gone 40 years, now he's 45. Mm-hmm. He's 5 or 6, but he remember me. I was one guy there, he lived right back inside. I had to come right by his house every day. We were real good friends. And his boys would tell him, said, Dad, here come old June Carr. He couldn't say Carr. Here come June Carr out. That's the first thing he ever said. He said June Carr before he said Daddy. And me and him were real good friends. We talk about now sin, which his mother's yet living, but his daddy's dead. And he said, boy, he'd remember me. He said, well, I guess that's what mom said. That's the first word he said, June Carr. That's what his daddy called me all.
June Carr.
And then we'd come by there. His truck would start, and mine wouldn't. We'd hook the one, pull him off, and start it. And if he's prepared, mine was running. I'd come by his house. Here he comes. We better stop and get him and pull us off. He won't start. But people would do that then. Mm-hmm. And now if you need to jump, they'll charge $25 to come out of the place to jump to you. But if he's trouble, I would carry a chain. We'd even jump a little bit, but everything in, though, was standard shift, eh? I hooked to him, pulled him out the road, 10 foot, maybe. Mm-hmm. Popped the clutch on and started his vehicle. And I'm going, oh, it'd be all right now. Okay. Cut him loose and go on.
We talked earlier, we were talking about church, and you said that you had gone to the Altamont.
Yeah, I used to go to Altamont.
Is that the only church that you attended when you were younger?
Yeah, when I was younger, that's the only place I went to that Altamont church.
Do you remember who the reverend was when you were?
Well, I remember some of them. We had one there, Reverend Smith, and a Reverend LaRue, and a Reverend Mize. Well, see now, they got Reverend Clark, and I've Reverend Myers stayed there 40-some years, I guess. And he died, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, and said first one another in our since then. Mm-hmm. But they had on 4 or 5, I know, early days. But that young man, and Reverend Myers, come in there. And he stayed there 40, 50 years, mm-hmm. 40 anyway. If not longer.
How large was the congregation?
At one time, it was probably 40 or 50.
40 or 50? Mm-hmm. Was it all African American?
Yeah. Sometimes a white friend may go, it's mm-hmm. like it is now. It's mm-hmm. about a white go down now, it is black. Mm-hmm. But most of them, well, East Bernstead used to be a whole lot of black people living, so I hear them say. Mm-hmm. There used to be a big mine camp. East Bernstead. It used to be a lot bigger than London. Mm. Let everything in. All it was skipped it this way for a while.
Now, what years are you talking about that it would have been a big mine camp?
That's probably back in the 20s. In the 20s. Back there when it's big.
And you said it used to be, you know, a lot of black people. Why was that? Was it because of families?
Well, see, they come out of people, I guess, coming out of the work, and they had a big coal mining thing, mm-hmm. and most of them was coal miners, I imagine. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like Harlem. But they had black and white in there, but most of them at that time were white or black, getting out of down south, mm-hmm. getting freed, I guess, and mm-hmm. anywhere they could find work.
They were coming up from themselves. Yeah. And do you think that's true of this area in East Bernstein around there? Do you think a lot of those people from the 20s were coming up from the south? Or?
Probably, yeah, looking for work, mm-hmm. coming north.
And then some of the family stayed.
Yeah, some drifted in here and stayed. Mm-hmm. But I don't know where Daddy and them were. People really come from to start with. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's out of Virginia or where, but mm-hmm. I know they raised down there. I had a farm down in Pulaski County, mm-hmm. but they raised right there, yeah. that where they come from before then, I don't know. But like I said, Daddy and parents, I've heard them mention the name, I can't think of them. I never did meet none of them.
Your grandparents, yeah.
But Mama, I know she used to go back and forth to crab watching after she was married here, and after we got up, oh, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 year old, we used to go down there. Mm-hmm. And her mother was dead then, for Mama raised all of her brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. But I remember her daddy. I know his name was Felix, but her mother, I've heard her mention it, but I can't never, I can't remember. But she probably died about the time she married, or maybe before she married. But I can't, well, like I said, I've heard her mention it, but I can't think of, I think her name was Rebecca or something, or other, but I remember her daddy very good. But well, we used to catch a train and go down there. And catch one back home, back there, well, years ago. Well, it had to be in the 30s. Finally, I started driving a truck in the 40s. And we'd go out and stay a weekend and come back. Mama says she raised all her brothers and sisters, so I really don't know what year she died. See, my Mama had a brother older than she did, I guess, and she was next. And all the rest of them were young in her, and she raised them. But she had one brother, went to East Pilope back there in about 1941, 42. He caught the same disease. He went over there to doctor people for her, and he died, so they buried him over there. But he was adopted out as a little bitty boy. He went by Copeland. I don't know where they were from. I was east in Copeland over around Hodgsonville. I think that's where he was at. But anyway, he went over to East Pilope. He made a doctor, and he went over to East Pilope to doctor on them sick people in that part of the country. And he called her what they had, I reckon. He died over there. So I remember him coming by Mama's on his way before he went over there. She had another sister there in Springfield, which was younger than Mama. She had a brother there in Cincinnati, and she had a brother in Crabwalker. I think he was the oldest. But the rest of them, Mama helped raise them where she taught.
Did you ever go to any other churches in the area, or did you stay out
of Mama? Went out of Mama most times. Since I've been up here, we go up here at 10. Since I retired, I was working at Hospital Nova, but to work.
Right. If we'll close with some sort of overall questions, how have you seen the community in this area of Laurel County change? You've talked about it a little bit already. What are some of the big changes you've seen within the community?
Yeah, right, right here. I really can't see that much difference in nothing.
You can't?
Now, if I like say, I've already got along the first community right in here. It's been pretty much the same ever since we've been down in here.
Do you see a change at all in the African-American community that's here?
No, already. The only thing about, well, like I say, go uptown or something or other, seen a change for now. You can go in like a human being and get you a sandwich. But like up in town where back there in the 60s, 50s, you couldn't. Well, you could if you know somebody where you growed up with or something else. They had to put in rest. They didn't pay no attention to it. They went somewhere where you didn't know, they didn't want to serve you. That's like when Sam and I run around here in yonder where I know I couldn't go in by a sandwich, I just didn't go. So they start putting in drive-ins, and you just go around anywhere. Let's see, I've hauled all up through North Carolina, all down in Georgia, and everywhere else, by fooling with a truck. And like I said, if I get down like that, I've heard so much trouble about Georgia. First time I went, I didn't know where to move or not. But we went to Georgia back there 40-some years ago. Never was treating about no worth my life. But that was kind of where, I guess, people were used to people. But we went down, we stayed in the hotel down there.
Well, they didn't seem like it made no difference whether you're black or white, nothing there. But if we went out to six, they probably stare at you. But we went down, so I had a boy, oldest boy, he had to have an operation in Georgia, which that's been 44, 45 years ago. They went down and stayed in Holiday Inn, welcome, that's where it was anywhere. They turned around and come back to London, like, went from Hobnail is. They might come say, well, we don't serve
people. So you think it was better
down there? It was better down there at that time where we was at than it was here. In Georgia, well, like I say, way down there, we down in Atlanta, so that's way down deep south.
Yeah.
Folks, we was up into our hotel, and there was feet no better nowhere. We stayed there a couple of nights and went on to I went to the hospital, but they had places there you could stay at the hospital. So I stayed there the rest of the time we was there. I was there for 30 days. Wow. But we stayed in a Holiday Inn out of Georgia.
Was that surprising to you that it was?
Nah, I didn't pay them. It's like, say, I always got on with everybody. If they, refused us, just went somewhere there. Yeah. But they didn't say nothing. Huh. We rested in, stayed, got ready to leave, and it's as nice as it could be, which I didn't stay in a hotel around here if I didn't have no reason to. So I've been in some restaurants around here, and they said, well, we don't serve you. Well, fine. Then I just didn't go back. But like I say, back when guys we know, I'd say they had this Blue Ching Lin up here in London, or J.B. Chad ran it. From the time he ran until he quit, we'd go anytime we wanted to. But so we know him there and everything, but somewhere didn't know it. But Manchester been the best place I've been for this show, even back in the 50s. You better go in wherever you want to.
Was that because there were more African Americans living there?
Might have been, or was it just closer people or something or other. But I've been over there, and in the 50s, about how cold we're all doing it. I ain't going in the big fancy, but I had no reason. I mean, in the restaurant I wanted to go in, I went in and sat down. You like a human being, but all these places I went to on the main drive, we don't serve color in here.
That seems weird, though, because in a way, it seems like you were, you know, close to white people growing up.
All of my friends been white.
But then there was also, when it came to going into public spaces, unless you knew the people who owned the restaurant, you still. It wasn't accepted. There was still racism.
That's where it was at, the place you went into. We go in some places, they have signs up. We don't serve color. If I seen it before I went in, I didn't go in.
Right.
And like I said, I've been out with boys, three or four together, and I'd go around the back because those didn't serve it. And when they get ready to go, I'd like to watch for them. We all get up and leave together.
So they would go ahead and go in and sit in?
Sometimes they get mad. Well, you can't go in. I ain't going in.
Yeah.
So we'd all just leave. And I was over. We was over out from Bowling Green, over at Orangeburg. Back in 65, we was having all that trouble. And some black boys called me off. It said, if you want to go down there, since this place needs you, go on down. So we'll be back in it. And I said, okay, if I won't go, I'll go. And I went back out and told them boys, I said, what do we have wrong? They supposed to say, if I want to go down there, since this place, go on down there. I told them, I ain't want to go down there. So I ain't going to get tired of this racket and somebody shoot me. I said, they having a problem, let them go to the after sale. I said, I ain't going down there. Which I'm back when I worked with her. I used to call Carol a two-burner common stove. Well, I didn't depend on anybody else. Well, I got to cook my own breakfast. I go to the store and buy me something. A bunch of eggs and fry it. I didn't think I'm going to need.
Right.
I carry a common stove in that truck. Well, like I say, I've always been independent. I always... made my own way, and I always had a job, and I didn't have to go around and baby nobody. I made my own way ever since I've been 9, 10 years old. And I said, I can fix me a hamburger if I want a hamburger. I said, get me a Coleman gas can, keep it full of gas. And I
I mean, a tree and cook me a breakfast I wanted.
So, did it ever bother you, though, at all, that you couldn't?
Well, you kind of felt a little bad about it when you were somebody, and all at once they tell you, well, you can't come in, all that kids. You feel much well, okay. And I've always wanted to put a big argument. I said, well, I ain't arguing about it. That's the way it is. Forget about it. But I tell you, I've run all my life, and there wasn't no kind of trouble. Mm-hmm. I tried to avoid it all the time. And so I said, it don't make no difference. I said, I'll go out to the store and buy me a lonely sandwich for a while. Raise Cain with him. Mm-hmm. I said, go in there and you make you mad, then you wind up in jail or something other. Mm-hmm. I said, it's not worth it. Well, we're going out, we're making it. Oh, no, you don't have to make them do nothing. Mm-hmm. Just forget about it.
But what did you have any feelings about, you know, what was going on with the civil rights and when you would read about it in the paper where people were going in? And
well, I just think, I suppose, people shouldn't be this way, but they are. And so, you know, what do you find it now? Between black and white. Well, it ain't only the white, it's the black too. Some of them don't like what's going this way, some of them don't like what's going that way. But I just believe in anybody doing what they want to if it's legal. If they want to go out with a white guy, fine. If we got the white girl, fine. That's between them. It don't bother me one way or the other. Like I say, all my friends all my life have been white. One's going to help me, it's been white. I know this guy, he died. Well, he died this year. He was in the coal business. Anytime I wanted to roll coal, if I had a nickel, I'd go over and get it. And I go out, I say, I ain't got no money today. Well, I ain't worried about it. Say. I said, if I haul a load too, I'll catch it up. Okay. And I'd haul 50 load and set it, catch up enough, then I could pay for it to go. A lot of times, spring of the year, April, May, people ain't buying for it's hot. Summer's coming, ain't thinking about no coal. Now what little money you got to save, which I wasn't married or nothing then. You done spent what you done made till the winter. And that's why I got $5, $10. I said, I go and get me a little coal, start hauling coal. Go over and have to pay for the coal. I go and friends, hey, I need a little coal. Well, I'll get what you want. I love a little coal. I haul 20 loads and I come back. I catch it up, and rest of the year, then pay it to win. And see, if this guy was in that kind of business, they have this like by haul wood. This guy's brother run this stay mill down here. And I go, you know, I ain't no charge of his. Well, we just like brothers. Well, we've been that way all our life. The whole family, with all them, well, this man runs stay mill and him about the same age. But I worked with them all my life. I worked for them and with them and everything else. And he said, you ain't charging you no wood. So now I don't ask you. And he likes to be all the way up in this, that close all our life. But like this other, his older brother died back in the spring. And well, all of them been in coal business, they've always flew around in some kind of business. And I've worked for him back when he stripped coal. I used to haul coal for him out of drip mine to the temples. And I bought coal to haul the houses and just work around with them. What up? I stopped working construction and stuff. Now that I get stayed in contact with him. You know, when I first retired, he tried getting to come down and go, I said, I don't work though. I want to work. And like I said, yes, I'll whip him. He'll go, anything you need, so let me know. If I can help you, I'll help you. I know you will. You always would. And we just got along that way all our life. That's right with everybody else. Like I say, last year, it rained so much, I had my garden planted right out there. Well, it flooded out. My neighbor right back there, he had it on the other side of the creek, so it flooded out. So I got my tiller, I went next to the barn, I tilled up my little spot. And it turned out good. He said, well, we'll just put ours together up here next year. I said, okay, we'll put it together. So we can put a garden together. Just like that, it's like no get along with anybody. Huh? He said, what you gonna plant? I said, I'll probably plant some beans and corn or anything. I said, what you I'll probably plant? I said, well, just plant it. Forget about it. And that's just the way I've always been, on this get along with everybody. That's the only way to be. you know, everybody. I said, I got two plaques back there in that bedroom. I'll show them to you in a minute. Well, I run 2 million miles without even having an accident for that bed. And I got plaques back in there, telling where I landed at, and fair and everything, yeah. But I said, some of the things you must be good. I said, no, I ain't good. I'm just lucky. I said, any time you stay out on this road and run 2 million miles without having to get a scratch on, not nothing on nobody else, you lucky. And he said, well, how you do that? I said, well, I said, CF keeps up with everything you do. Every mile you run, they got it down. And I got them 2 million mile plaques back there in the bedroom where they give me for safe driving. And that's just being lucky.
Well, do you have anything else you want to add or talk about before we're done?
Yeah, I don't know nothing.
Nothing else?
No, I don't know nothing there. I think if I start telling too much, I think I'm telling a story. Well, there's other stuff I've done. Daddy and Mom and them, they did that. And actually, we hauled coal for a living, and plowed people's garden for a living, delivered groceries when the mud was knee deep for people to walk up and down the road. But see, all these roads used to be no dirt roads. This road right here, I remember when it used to be gravel. I remember right in here, it used to be a swamp. Well, like I said, when I said, used to be much coal mine on back down that road. That's reason I guess they called it Slate Lick Road.
Slate Lick Road.
Yeah, but all back in there used to be mines and things. I hauled coal right by here. But it's all gravel years ago.
Thank you for talking to me today.
You're welcome.